that. DG, honorable members, good morning. I think I wanted to start off by asking all of us to really stand up and observe a minute of silence for the passing on of our previous chief whip, Nosipho Ntuambi Nambi of the NCOP. Can we raise? Chairperson or chairwoman of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My name is Ulifile Sefako, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Mbuyisela April Matheus, member of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I am from the INC.
I'm also from the INC.
Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF.
Thanks, Chair. Morning, everybody. My name is Jomo. The name is Nyambi. I'm from the most beautiful province, Mpumalanga. A member of the Glorious Movement, African National Congress.
Morning, Chairperson. I'm Bayer Smith from Limpopo. I don't know why the DG wants to know our political affiliation, but in any way, I'm from the Democratic Alliance. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Cathy Rabuskaghi. I'm from the Western Cape and the other beautiful, most beautiful province in the country. And I'm from the DA.
Good morning. My name is Bridget Masango from Gauteng, representing the Democratic Alliance.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ali van Jaarsveld. I'm a member of the public, ex-member of Parliament, and got an interest in this committee, so in the operations of this department, in actual fact. Not a vested interest, but interested in what goes on. Thanks.
Over to Gigi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Siviso Maduna. I'm the Director General of Public Enterprises. it's very important that we as the department know the composition of the committee that we are accountable to. It's not an unusual thing. In fact, that's how Parliament operates. As a department, it's irrelevant our political affiliations, but the members of committees come from political parties, and it's important that we know which
Operations Officer, also called DDG Corporate Management at the department.
Good morning, my name is Jackie Mudisani. I'm from the department DDG Strategic Partnerships.
Good morning, members. My name is Beverly Mkumanda. I'm from the department and I'm head of HR.
Good morning. My name is Impiwe Makatini. I'm also from the department, the Deputy Director General responsible for Energy and Procurement.
Good morning. My name is Johanna Boyton. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group, CNG.
Thank you. I think, okay.
Hi there, good morning. My name is Mohammed Khalid Sayed. I'm the parliamentary liaison officer to the Minister of Public Enterprises. Thank you. And I'm from the Western Cape.
Honorable member, Pakis came in late. Honorable, can you introduce yourself as well as your party which you present?
My name is Pearl Pakis, ANC.
Thank you, members. I think now we can go and carry on with our business. But before I'm doing that, I almost forget the most important people. Can the staff of this committee please introduce themselves by names? Because I don't know them by now, so I will ask them to do it themselves. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Loli Sibisi. I am the committee secretary. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. My name is Amanda Mingani. I'm the committee assistant of the committee. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Desiree Soga. I'm Mrs. Prince's executive secretary.
Thank you very much. I think we can go on now to business. Can I go to the agenda of the day? I think all the honorable members who have the agenda in front of them. Can I get a proposal for the acceptance of the agenda, please? Must I read it out? Okay.
I propose adoption of this agenda.
Can I have a second? Okay, thank you. Item 1 on the agenda is the adoption of the committee program. And I think the program was circulated to everyone. Do all the members have the program in front of you? Going through the program is today, the 9th, briefing by the Department of Public Enterprises, 16 July 2014, briefing by the Department of Science and Technology on its strategic plan and also its annual performance plan. 23rd of July, the briefing by Communications Department as well as Telecommunications and Postal Services, also on their strategic plan and also annual performance plan. 30th of July, presentation on the legacy report and overview on the departments and entities by committee. The committee support staff will do that. We would love to do it firstly, because it's likely that we will get the legacy report firstly. But due to the fact that the budget is in, we are dealing with a budget now. We was asked to deal first with the strategic plans and annual performance plans. Thank you. Can I have a mover for the adoption of the program? A mover, please. Honorable Fakir.
I move.
Can I have a seconder for the report?
Second.
Honorable Stefago, seconded proposal. Thank you. Number two on the agenda is the adoption of the committee minutes dated the 25th of June 2014. Is on your program looking like this? Can I have a mover for the exception? Honorable Lavashkasni, proposed. Say seconded. Honorable Masango, seconded. Thank you. We're now going to point number three on the agenda, the presentation by the Department of Public Enterprises on the strategic plan and annual performance plan. Before giving over to the department, I think I would ask Mr. Eric Bosgont, I don't know whether I pronounce it right, to just give a 5-minute briefing of what we really expected from the department out of this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's just a few issues, really, because this is our first meeting as a committee and the supporting staff. We thought that it might not necessarily be fair for members to engage with the department whilst there are issues that maybe they are not familiar, because our intention was to firstly make a presentation on the legacy report so that members are familiar with what are the issues with regard to the department and various other departments of which the committee has oversight responsibilities. But you couldn't do that because the parliamentary program was changed. But on the other hand, we wanted just the members to make sure that in their deliberation with the department, they focus on key issues, priority issues, are looking at policies of the government, but also because this is a select committee, to always keep an eye on provincial interests, because it might not necessarily be clear now, but when the committee engages the department, especially the SOEs, then the interest of the provincial interest then might become very clear. But at this point, it might not necessarily become clear, but that is the view that the committee must always keep in mind, that whatever the department is doing, they focus on provinces. It could be issues around recruitment, internship, could be projects that the department are engaged on. Also, on the other hand, it would have been better if the committee was finished with the budget, so that as the department makes its presentation on its annual performance, then the committee is able to correspond that to the budget that the department has. But you couldn't do that because of the parliamentary program that has been changed. So in overall, we are saying that the committee, and I hope the department does not bear with us, because members will obviously ask questions that and the department might feel that they need more clarity, because it's really for the first time for the members. And also on our side as the support staff, we've made the program so that members of the committee are familiar with all the issues, not only with the Department of Public Enterprises, but communication,
postal services and telecommunication as well as science and technology. On the other hand, just to make things easier for the secretary when writes the report, sometimes members will like to see a situation where they make recommendations on the department. For an example, members could say, we need to go to see the department, the staff, compliment what they are doing, or maybe even some of the projects that the department is undertaking. For an example, its oversight responsibility on the SOEs, whether to say whether we can go to ESCOM and stuff like that, so that we are able to compile a program for the committee going forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think I will now hand over a CD to your department to do the presentation.
We all are new here, and I'm sure we all are very excited to learn and to understand the department so that we can go forward with our work. I think I spoke this morning with your minister. Me and she love to report that it's on that kind of way, that kind of that kind of relationship that we can chat beyond working professional working things. So yeah, not like that. But I spoke to her this morning, and we talk about some other stuff. And she was really, she wanted to be here, but due to certain circumstances, she cannot be here. And I'm sure that DG, you will refer to that. Thank you. Give over to you. I now, before giving over to you, DG, can we recognize Honorable Sain of Singh? Welcome,
Comrade Singh. Yeah. Thank you. My apologies, I'm still finding my feet around this.
Thank you. Okay. Also, Honorable Hai, I hope I pronounce it right because he made me confused about the Zulu, Sutu and the Kosa pronouncement, but I hope I say it right. Okay, thank you. Can you introduce yourself before we started, because you must introduce you, saying from which party you are. Thank you. Over to you.
My name is Mandla Aizekhai. I'm from the African National Congress from the Eastern Cape. I was initially in another committee, but I was later on changed to this committee, so I was not part of the meeting that elected the chairperson. I've been made the whip of this committee. Thank you.
Mr. Sain?
Thank you very much. Once again, apologies for being late. Omi Singh from the KZN Legislature, KZN province, and I'm also, for my sins, a chairperson of members' interests, co-chair, and I'm happy to be this committee here as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Can we now go over to the department? DG, we are giving over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. Each being an opportunity to meet, I'd like to take this opportunity to firstly congratulate each one of you on your appointment to the important responsibilities that you will have as members of this committee. And I silence in honor of Honorable Ntolambi, I would like to say that our department has knew her very well. She was previously in this committee, and we worked very well with her. She was the chair of this committee. We our interest is to establish a working constructive relationship with the committee, so that you can guide us, you can advise us, and if necessary, you can criticize us if we are not doing things in accordance with your expectations and your responsibilities of oversight. We try to be accessible, transparent, and indeed, we are also at your disposal to support you so that you are also effective in the roles that you play. By mostly be by providing you with information, reports, and so on. So we look forward to a productive relationship in the interest of our country, to make sure that the fifth democratic parliament is an effective parliament that helps our country move forward. The presentation is on the screen, but it has been circulated. It seeks to summarize at a very high level the documents that we submitted to Parliament, the strategic plan of the department, the annual performance plan. Members will have had those documents now for 3 weeks, and I do hope that you were able to go through the document. The way we are required, the tabling is a statutory requirement. We have to comply with it, and we did. On the 27th of June, we tabled, as required by the statute, we tabled the documentation. If members have not had the opportunity, I don't think it's a train smash, you will engage with those documentations, and with the assistance of the committee secretariat, you can delve into the issues, and we will be available should you require us once you have familiarized yourself with the contents of those documents. But they were circulated. So I come here with my delegation assuming that you will have read, and so we can do a high-level summarized presentation. The outline of the presentation is as reflected in the on the screen. We'll do some introductory remarks. We will outline how we have organized the work of the department and how the department is structured. We will locate our work within the current strategic context in the country, which really speaks to the key challenges facing our country. We will reflect on the vision and mission of the department and outline the strategic objectives that we set for ourselves, how we will go about implementing them, and then to focus on the key performance areas in terms of what the work we'll be doing will entail. We will also present our budget, the five-year budget going forward. And then we'll speak about the capacity of the department, and I'll make some concluding remarks. As I indicated, the tabling of a strategic plan and the annual performance plan is a statutory requirement. And the purpose is to outline the work that the department will be undertaking. In a particular year for the annual performance plan, over the next 5 years, in as far as the strategic plan of the department is concerned, so that when the budget is being voted upon, which is something that will be done. taking place, then the members of parliament and the public know what is the work that will be undertaken with the resources that will be allocated to the department. We put together a strategy guided by a number of principles. Firstly, is to recognize that as a department, we are required to advance the key strategic objectives of the government, the priorities of the government. So everything that we do, we try to satisfy ourselves that it advances the key overarching policy priorities, and those will be assigned in the medium-term strategic framework of government, the five-year medium-term strategic framework, which is itself informed by the National Development Plan. So as we approach the end of the last administration, the beginning of this new administration, we have been encouraged by the cabinet, the president, the ruling party, to make sure that we align with the National Development Plan as the common framework and vision for our country. So this is what informs pretty much the scope of our strategy. Secondly, that we must identify very clear outcomes in terms of the work we will be doing. We will have to make sure that our work impacts on the economic environment, which is one of an economy that is weakening. There is a downturn that is underway in the economy that is a major risk that we must respond to. So while looking ahead, projecting ahead to 5 years, we do need to respond to the immediate situation. We also need to emphasize coordination and working in collaboration with other players in government. As you see, as I take it through the presentation, a lot of the things that we have to do as a department require that we work with other departments. And so the principle of coordination and cooperation is something very important. This year is a particularly unique year. Normally, these sort of presentations are early in the year, but it having been an election year, everything else has been delayed, and once the parliament started to kick into action, everything moved very quickly, but we were able to take the minister through the contents of our strategy, new as she was. So what I'm presenting, as you will see in the documents themselves, the minister has signed off on. And now really going forward, it's for us to implement the work that we have planned. About the department, the purpose of the department, like mandate of the department, is to act as the shareholder representative on behalf of the state in some of the major state-owned companies in the country. There are 8 of them: Eskom, Dinel, Safricol, Eskom for electricity generation, Dinel for defense manufacturing, Safricol in forestry, broadband infraco, for broadband rollout, broadband infrastructure, Alexco, which is diamond mining, Transnet, and rail and ports and logistics, and two airlines, South African Airways and South African Express. Some of these companies have their own founding legislation. In fact, the majority of them have their own founding legislation. I think it's only Denial that does not have the founding legislation. And that legislation, therefore, frames our relationship as a department to those companies, and typically that legislation will specify that the Minister of Public Enterprises is the shareholder, the sole shareholder, because these are companies that are 100% owned, 100% owned by the state. And so our mandate is to exercise oversight in terms of corporate governance, established corporate governance practices, but beyond that, to ensure that the companies are vehicles for achieving and pursuing strategic objectives, as I've indicated, as outlined in the National Development Plan, but other strategic policy documents of government, such as the New Growth Path and Industrial Policy Action Plan. The work of the department is organized into programs. The first program being to provide management and administration over the department to deal with activities like strategic planning, monitoring, and reporting. We are required on a monthly, quarterly, and annual basis to produce reports internally within government in terms of treasury requirements. But annually, we table an annual report to Parliament. And in fact, we have just finalized the annual report for the year ended March 2014, which we will have the opportunity further to engage with this committee on, which will also provide the committee with an opportunity to engage with the work of the department and to see how we go about doing that, what our successes are, what our challenges and so on. So it's also responsible for providing the support systems, resourcing, whether it's IT, whether it's financial resourcing in terms of the budget, whether it's human resources. All of these are important matters to enable us to execute our mandate and our plans. It will probably account for the largest part of our budget, this program, because this is where we pay salaries, and given the nature of the work we do, which is in a sense I could describe it as professional, it's professional services. We are kind of a professional services. We're not a service delivery department in that we don't transact with the public directly. But we provide oversight, which requires us to have certain skills. Our people, therefore, are a very critical, important resource. So a lot of our budget goes to compensation of employees. And a small proportion of that is for projects, what are called goods and services. Program 2, legal and governance. This is where all the protocols and the statutory regulations and compliance standards, norms and standards in terms of corporate governance are located here. It provides advice to the minister with regard to compliance of companies to different legislation. For a start, the Public Finance Management Act, PFMA, but our companies are also governed by the Companies Act and all other legislation, environmental legislation, labor legislation. But we also provide legal advice, or we exercise oversight over legal oversight over major transactions, capital transactions that are strategically important, and that require the approval of the shareholder in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. But of course, this is also where we monitor key risk factors that may arise in the environment or in which the companies operate. There are always risks associated with the work of these departments, and so this area provides the oversight and advice to the minister. Program 3 is really the core business of the department, the purpose of which is to align the corporate strategies of the companies with the government's strategic intent, to monitor and benchmark their financial and operational performance. So this is where the different sectors of the initial companies operate. So we have sector specialists, financial analysts, that at all times monitor financial performance, but also operational performance. Are the companies achieving the targets that they've been set, and that they contract on those targets with the minister, and so we have to advise the minister if there are divergences in terms of that, so that we can take corrective action. But also to monitor their investment programs. Currently, for example, Eskom and Transnet are undertaking massive capacity expansion programs that we must also monitor to see that it is unfolding in accordance with the plans and the timelines and the budgets. Within that program, as I've indicated, are sector teams. The energy and broadband, they look after Eskom. Manufacturing, we call it Manufacturing Enterprises Team, they look after those three companies there, Alexco, Safcol, and Dinel. The transport team looks after Transnet and the two airlines. The strategic partnership, this is where we try to explore funding models, monitoring the company's access to finance, to see whether they're doing so in a cost-effective manner, and to also look for innovative funding approaches. It is clear that going forward, the state-owned companies cannot depend on the government, on fiscal transfers from the national treasury. They'll have to be creative and innovative in terms of how they fund their expanding, in all cases, expanding mandates. Economic impact and policy alignment is where we look at what is the contribution. We try to monitor what is the contribution of these companies to the economy and to job creation, industrial development, enterprise development, transformation, like economic empowerment, and so on. So those are the programs particularly the core businesses of
yes.
The organogram at a high level of the department is on slide 7. We have a minister and deputy minister, and between the two of them, they divide responsibility for exercising closer, more detailed oversight of the different components of the work of the department. Dealing with the strategic context is to make the observation which I referred to earlier on, that we are living in very constrained economic circumstances, largely influenced by the global environment. The global economy is still very subdued. Our economy is dependent on the global economy. We sell goods to the global economy, and we procure input from the global economy. When it is in downturn, it means that the world buys fewer goods and services from us. That has a direct impact on some of the companies. It will mean, for example, that Transnet will transport less volumes if the world is buying less from us, whether manufactured goods or mineral products. And as a downturn, the demand is reduced. The Transnet will carry lesser volumes, which means their revenues will be reduced. And equally, if South Africans, due to subdued domestic conditions, import less, we demand less from the rest of the world, it means equally that Transnet will deliver lesser goods from our ports into the markets in the economy. That affects Transnet in that way. It affects South African Airways in that way, because when the economy is down, people travel less, so SAA will carry lesser passengers as such. It will affect Eskom, because when the economy is in downturn, it means that productive activities are shrinking, demand for electricity is reduced, and Eskom's revenues are also under pressure. So the economic environment has a direct impact in our portfolio in that way. There are, however, certain structural constraints that are within our control. A lot of this is not in our control, but there are some structural constraints that are in our control. We know that part of what constrains the economy is capacity constraints in regard to electricity capacity or rail capacity. And it is for that reason that Eskom and Transnet have embarked upon this massive capital investment programs to deliver the capacity that the economy requires. Because when there's an upturn, as there could potentially be sooner than later, reduced rail capacity means that the economy will not grow at its full potential, and that will not attract investment. If people feel that there's no electricity, there's not enough electricity, there will not be sufficient investment, and we need investment to grow the economy and create jobs, as it were. see, I put that graph on the right-hand side of the slide to show you the extent to which government as a player in the economy, how that has become important to support the economy. Because in some sense, government is the investor of last resort. When the private sector does not invest for various reasons, that could be quite damaging to the economy. And you see that at least since 2006 going up, public investment, public sector investment has played a very important role in keeping the growth of the economy ticking, as it were. We would like to ensure that there is a positive interdependence between investment by the state, which hopefully will stimulate investment by the private sector, particularly in sectors where the private sector might perceive the risks for investment as being too high, but the state has the ability to take more risks, and often this is what the state relies on state-owned companies to do this. So public sector investment has become very, very important, and in there really is the contribution and role of state-owned companies that under our oversight. The mission of the department, the vision of the department, is a vision that we have recently, at least last 2-3 years, we have changed and adopted, revised and adopted this vision. And it seeks to signify a shift in the emphasis of our oversight. That it's not enough to ensure that these companies are well governed and that they comply with corporate governance. It is important that we begin to look at the outcomes. What are the outcomes from their work? And so we've spelled out there that they have to drive investment. They have to improve productivity in the economy, and they have to ensure that there's transformation. And they have to ensure that these things are achieved also in their relationships with their customers and their suppliers. And if they do this, we believe that it will support growth, it will support industrialization, helping us to create jobs and develop the skills base, necessary skills base for future development of our economy and our country. I've indicated there some of the key outcomes that we try to direct the activities of the companies to, and we try to measure them against these kind of outcomes. The strategic objectives we set for ourselves are firstly to review the shareholder oversight, and again in doing so to emphasize outcomes which are aligned to the country's developmental priorities. The second one would be to promote good corporate governance. Good corporate governance is typically associated with firstly compliance with the Companies Act, which regulates behavior of the company, behavior of the directors of a company. There is their roles and responsibilities are outlined. But good corporate governance is also understood in relation to the King Code codes, the clean codes of good practice. Typically, King three, the third round of the codes of good practice that have been developed by the retired judge, Evan King. We have to ensure that the department has the necessary capacities. It's not a question of numbers. We are a small department, and I'll come back to this theme of the evolution, the history of the department. We're a small department trying to do very big things. The challenge is us to ensure that the caliber of professionals that we have is equal to the task. I'm particularly at all times keen to ensure that the staff have the necessary skills and that they improve and enhance their skills. The more the better improved their skills, the more effective they are. Because there's a lot of complexity in trying to monitor and oversee the activities of these companies. These are large structures, these companies, large, complex organizations. They challenge us in many ways to try and understand how they operate, what they do. So it's important that the officials of the department. We in the last 3 years, have achieved only modest increases in the resources in terms of the budget. But in the time, we were able to increase the headcount of the department by 30-35 people. I think the total establishment of the department right now is 227. As you can see, it's a small department. I don't expect that it will grow, given the constraint fiscus that the National Treasury is managing. We will not achieve significant growth in budget. In fact, this is 2 years in a row where the Treasury has not allocated additional resources, so we are having to live within our means. So to speak, and to also reduce costs and implement cost reduction measures across the department. The fourth strategic objective we set for ourselves is to stabilize these state-owned companies. Some of them have experienced financial turbulence, largely because of the environment, and this is particularly the case with the airlines. The airlines operate in a highly competitive environment. In fact, South African airlines have been losing market share to competitors. We've opened the skies, the national skies, for foreign carriers that are aggressive in terms of taking the market share, to a point where we believe, as a department, in our relationship and in engagement with the Department of Transport, that we really have to review, you know, what have been the benefits of opening airways in the way we have, opening our skies in the way we have. In terms of, for example, prices, in terms of the numbers of people that are coming, and in terms of particularly access of our people to the aviation sector. Are more South Africans using the airlines? Are more South Africans flying using aviation as a mode of transport? So there's a whole range of things there that we need to look at. But also to look at the balance sheets, the companies are required to do more things, which puts pressure on their balance sheet. So there's a big area of work that we are working with the National Treasury on to look at how we can continue to support state-owned companies. And I've spoken about infrastructure investment to enhance the capacity of the economy. And here we are doing this within the framework also of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordination Commission, which has identified key strategic integrated projects that can unlock capacity, that can stimulate economic activity, particularly in those areas where these projects are being undertaken. For example, if you look at the Medupi project, this comes the latest generation power generation project, Medupi. It's the largest construction project in the African continent. It's amongst the largest construction projects in the whole world. In the whole world, it is transforming the economy of Limpopo. The economy of Limpopo will never be the same with that project. We are very interested in making sure that these projects change the economy, they transform the economy, and they include people and communities, especially that they impact positively people and communities in which they are undertaken. The companies spend a lot of money when they invest. We try to say, try and make sure that you buy local products, because if you are building a power station or you are building a railway network, but you import everything, or you are refurbishing rolling stock, but you buy everything from overseas, insofar as the manufacture of those things creates jobs. Those jobs are not created here. They are created in the countries where these things are bought. So to the extent possible, where there's capacity, where some of these industries are there, they shut down because we were not investing in building power stations. We were not investing in building the railways. The industries died. But where we can revive them? Because these are multi-year, long-term projects. They can stimulate these industries, and we can help to reindustrialize the South African economy. So the program that we have developed, where we monitor this, we force the companies to go out there, find the suppliers, work with those suppliers, help them to meet the standard that you require, because normally these are the standards dictated by the original equipment manufacturers from which we procure. This is just a slide to indicate the logical sequencing of how we approach implementation. We define the objectives, we define the key strategic initiatives to undertake to pursue these objectives. We engage with the minister all the time to ensure that she's comfortable with that we're doing the right things. We coordinate with other departments, and of course, we speak to our resources. With regard to the key initiatives and projects that we will undertake to implement the objectives I've just outlined. With regard to the first one, the reviewing the shareholder oversight, it is to try and look at the legislative framework that governs state ownership, there is actually no legislative framework that defines state ownership. The Public Finance Management Act does not deal with state ownership in a comprehensive way, but it recognizes that the state owns companies and it regulates the relationship. But there's nowhere where the function of state ownership and the exercise of shareholder oversight is defined in law. Now, that creates a problem for us because it means that the legal and institutional framework for the exercise of state ownership is very fragmented. There are state-owned companies in our portfolio, others are elsewhere, you know, in other departments, Department of Transport, and so on. We all do different things. We actually have turned out as a department to be almost custodians of best practice with regard to shareholder oversight, because this is the only thing that we do. Other departments, you know, they do this. They also do service delivery. They do policies. They do legislation and all kinds of things. And the function of shareholder oversight in the mix of things they do tends to suffer. So we have a very specified set of activities governed by the Companies Act, as I've indicated, but also the Public Finance Management Act. So the whole legal and institutional framework in which state-owned companies operate is in need of serious review and overhaul. The fragmentation sometimes makes it even much more difficult for state-owned companies compared to the private sector, because they are accountable, especially sometimes in the Department of Trading, Public Enterprises, but the policy departments, you know, that they also do implement or pass legislation and policies that affect them. And sometimes they are torn between competing, if you like, policy and legal requirements as such. I'll give you an example, because it's one that's really confronting us at the moment. Eskom is currently managing a very, very constrained system. The Eskom plants are very, very old. They are underlying. 90% of electricity is produced from coal. It is a polluting activity, probably the leading polluting activity, which the Department of Environmental Affairs correctly is regulating. But Eskom needs all the power plants that it has right now to utilize as well. It has to run those power plants to full capacity to keep the lights on. But the Department of Environmental Affairs says, no, but you've got to reduce the emissions, which means that Eskom has to take some capacity out of the system. And if it does that, there will be load shedding. We will not be able to keep the lights on. So what do we do? Do we let Eskom switch off the lights to comply with the environment, or do we let them continue to operate in ways that are not compliant, so to speak? It's a difficult issue for Eskom, but we have to support Eskom, and we have to arrive at a place ESCOM begins to, or ESCOM takes initiatives and measures that show that it will comply, because it cannot be exempted. Because there are other private sector companies that are looking at how we deal with ESCOM, and we're going to give ESCOM special treatment, because ESCOM has to. So perhaps phase out longer, maybe you want to phase out compliance over a long period, because that compliance is very expensive. They have to fit in new technologies that are very, very expensive. And do they fix, do they invest massively in power stations that are, that will be, that will go out of commission in the near future? You know, what are the economics of all of this? These are very difficult issues. But I refer to this just to make the point that the environment has, there must be some rationalization, some clarification of the regulatory and policy environment in which state-owned companies operate. It is sometimes very, very, very difficult, and it impacts quite negatively. There are other examples, and as the committee gets familiar with the substance of the work, you will see. This is one, but townsite has got their own issues as well. FAA has got their own issues, and so on and so forth. The reviewing of the logical planning monitoring is really how we cascade the overarching priorities and objectives of government into the shareholder agreement that defines the targets that the companies must perform, must achieve, and then of course all of that then goes into their corporate plan, the annual corporate plan. We can improve in that area. In the dashboard, we try to have real-time access to key information that enables us to know what's going on the financial side and operational side, and so on. Promoting good governance, I've spoken to this, I won't spend too much time on this, because it's about PFMA, Companies Act, King 3. The fundamental issue here, if the companies are going to be good corporate citizens, they also need to be a lot more transparent. They need to be a lot more accessible. Historically, these are very inward focused companies, very closed, very inaccessible. Some might argue very unaccountable. So here, apart from compliance with the law, is to promote a kind of conduct by the companies that makes them responsive to people. They have to be accessible to people. Sometimes the way they deal with stakeholders forces stakeholders to come to us and to complain. And so sometimes we become a complaints office. For the companies. Here is an area about provincial engagement, which is the last bullet in the slide, which is something we started to do at least over the last 3 years. There we say to the companies, you can't just rock up in a particular province to start digging holes and bringing tractors and so on without having engaged with the provincial government to see how will that impact on the plans of the province. How can we define and enhance synergies between what the provinces are trying to do and what you as a company on behalf of the national government are trying to do? Because sometimes, as I was saying about B2B,
can I interrupt you for a minute? I
noted that there's still 10 pages for us to go. If you can maybe try to...
It will move quickly.
Because there is still, we must give time to the committee to ask questions for clarity.
Certainly, Chairperson. Certainly. Anyway, the projects of companies sometimes become the anchor projects in the economies of the provinces, and so we've been trying to promote that coordination and alignment. The capacity is about HR. I spoke to this as well, so I'm not going to spend too much time about recruiting skills, retaining those skills, and developing those skills. It's about this area is about improving the delivery model of the department. I did see a bit to the strengthening of the balance sheet. For example, the airlines, as we speak, are in financial distress. They require serious intervention. We've been giving them guarantees and so on. But all the guarantees, the government guarantee does, it allows the company to go borrow more. And these companies are now drowning, I think, in debt. The President in his State of the Nation address spoke about the need to financially support ESCOM, so that's quite exciting. That's an exciting opportunity for us to see how we can assist this company that is undertaking such critical projects for the economy. Alexco and Safcol are very unique companies because in the way the areas in which they operate and their relationship with communities, they can actually be community development vehicles. They operate in areas that are economically depressed, and they operate on land that is subject of land claims. So the land, for example, in which the forests are, has been transferred to the people, which means, in fact, actually there has to be a partnership between the company and communities. How we define the models for this is something that these strategic repositioning speaks to grapple to find win-win sort of partnerships between the companies and communities that own the land. So is in Alexco in the Rift Basin community. The infrastructure investment, I'm not going to spend time on this chair because I'm sure the committee are aware of all the major infrastructure initiatives. I did speak about the leveraging of procurement. I will not, again, spend too much time. We've spelled out specified SAA because they are in the market to buy new aeroplanes. And we do have an aerostructures industry that can manufacture components. In fact, South African companies manufacture components for Airbus. So there should be a profitable partnership in that area. This thing we call competitive supplier development is what I was talking about, where you go find suppliers, support them, bring them up to speed so they can meet your requirement. We've set an ambitious target of 75% expenditure target to be locally procured. We also, in recognition of the challenge of youth unemployment, we are requiring of the companies to focus on youth, which of their activities can impact positively on youth. Apart from just employing young people, because professionals that come out of university, going in there, you know, ESCOM and all of these other companies contribute to employment, but also youth enterprises. Support youth enterprise. So we've got a program there. And most importantly, skills development. If you go to slide 19. Skills development is critical. Historically, the companies have been the leading artisan skills training agencies, better than universities. But of course, when they became under financial constraints, they started to reduce investments in that area. But we have now forced them to. Because when they embark upon this capital investment, they need the skills. So they are investing in their own training for their own requirements, but they are also in certain instances training beyond their requirements for the economy. This is one of the very successful programs of the department and the companies, which we are very proud of. Because of its success, we've partnered with the Department of Higher Education and Training to see how we enhance the impact of this program. There's our budget. As you can see, it only modestly increases from 272 in the year 13-14 to 285. And as I've indicated, the compensation takes a big part of that. In years when we, let's say, we've negotiated financial support with the Treasury, which comes into our budget, you'll see, you know, it sometimes goes into the billions. It was 1.4 billion in 2012-13, but there's a transfer to I think that Pinel and Alexco. This is the staff of the department. As I've indicated, we've increased the post-establishment from 168 in 2009. 210 in 2012-13, and over the medium term, we will reach a maximum of 222. Because we're a small department trying to do big things and expanding responsibilities, I try to make sure that we operate at full capacity, full throttle. So we fill vacancies. Our vacancy rate currently sits at 1.8. I'm hoping that this will be an area that will improve as we go forward. In conclusion, Chair, the State of the Nation has re-emphasized government's commitment to address the country's developmental challenges. The National Development Plan provides us with a vision of what country we can be, and we have to ensure that our state-owned companies are aligned with that vision. We will implement actions that are aligned with the NDP and that are also contained in the new core path. So we deliver on this objective of radical socio-economic transformation. If there is going to be radical socio-economic transformation, this department and the companies in our portfolio will play an important role in that regard. We'll continue to improve our oversight. We will work with the state-owned companies to ensure that we are more effective in monitoring their capital investment program. And of course, we will continue to pay attention to our resources. Thank you.
Thank you, DG, for that presentation. I'm sure that one was able to pick up some of the questions in your mind that you had when you hear and read through the papers about the challenges in some of these departments. I think I will now give opportunity to members for questions of clarity or maybe recommendations or whatsoever. I first acknowledge Honorable I'm going to give numbers, otherwise I'm going to be confused. Let me get the list of the names. Yeah. Okay, number one, Honorable Sefako. And two, Honorable Pakis. And three, Honorable Yambi. Is there any others? Four, Honorable Labeskahni. Thank you. In this format. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much, Chair. Let me start by welcoming this informative report that we have just received from ODG. You preambled by indicating that indeed South Africa is part of the global family. And the brutality of the international economy has serious impact on the economy of South Africa. The worrying factor is the competition. The competition that is that has opened up, particularly on our South African Airways, which has opened up in such a way that it is not assisting in our economy. There's a flood of other foreign competitors. As we go forward, it will be very much important to seriously, even as the committee, how best can we assist with some intervention in that flooded market. The second one will be the question related to the electricity. It's a very key in the development of our country. You know, historically, electricity was enjoyed by the very few. The majority of the South Africans historically didn't enjoy. Now that the development is open even in the rural area, where each and every citizen of this country should have access to the electricity, being in the rural area as much as also in the highly industrialized area. Our development was characterized by serious developed and underdeveloped. Now if you look at the ESCO general, I just want to pose a question to say, should the Medupi plant be completed, can it assist in order to relieve us from the others that has been inherited, which are not ecologically friendly, that are polluting our clean air? So if Medupi is completed, can we be able maybe to do away with these others? And perhaps also look at how is the community around this plant heavy duty plant. And the emerging business benefiting from this plant. As the bulk of the procurement, having indicated that we mostly procuring from outside. Let me pause. Perhaps I'll have the opportunity maybe to have the second one.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Over to Honorable Papi.
I request that you give Honorable Nyambi, because he's supposed to join another meeting. I will come immediately after him.
Thank you. Over to Honorable Nyambi. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks for understanding. Let me join and welcome the presentation. Maybe I'm sorry that let me apologize in front of the department that for me not being part till the end, but Honorable Parkins and the Chair will assist me with the responses that will be given, so I'll get them. It was a quite good presentation that is clarifying a lot of issues, DG, but maybe indicate earlier that in future, it was so very interesting when you started asking us and we clarify ourselves. And I realized that with your experience, you took advantage of us and you wanted to us to be deprived the opportunity to engage more, and you were going to do a presentation for almost the entire time. But be that as it may, in future we'll be able to raise what we want to raise. But it was a very good presentation that is showing us that it's responding to what was raised by the President in the State of the Nation address. My few questions. The first one is in relation to the government shareholder management bill. If you can take us through where is that process now, because that is key for you to achieve what you have presented to us. If you can share with us the process, that's the first one. The second one, if you check the AG's report of the previous financial year, it raised issues about not adhering to some SMART principles. How do we intend to deal with that in this financial year? The third one, it's encouraging that you have reduced the issue of the vacancy rate. It's now at less than 2%, of which is very encouraging. But with that as it may, I still see that you still have a quite chunk of money that is earmarked for consultants. Maybe if you can try to unpack that so that we can have a better sense. The last one is about the issue of the presentation that you have made today. All of us, when we're introducing ourselves, we were even joking about the provinces that we are coming from, because we are representing the interests of these provinces. And if maybe you can assist in future about a presentation that will touch a reflection of these provinces about some of the things that you'll be doing, so that we don't come with false accusation and say in this province this is not happening, it's happening to that province. But if you can have a slide that will not cover as we are doing it in the NA, because they are dealing with the only national issues. And with us, I was very happy because we even have a specific slide that was showing us that you are going to attend to the issue of intergovernmental relations. And we are the relevant select committee that will be looking at that. So if you can have that slide so that we can be able to engage on that. And you are quite correct
there are a lot of things that are being done in provinces, especially when you talk of stuff called in the rural poorest of the poor provinces. But if you reflect about that, so that we can be able to engage and assist and give only recommendations, because it's not only us asking questions, but we have to be able to assist so that we are able to meet your mandate as presented. Otherwise, I was inspired by the presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Member. First, Comrade Pake.
Okay, thank you for referring to me, Comrade Pake. Let me appreciate, Chair, the opportunity and the energy that lays the presentation from the side of the DG. You know, I was listening with interest to give us more examples, practical, classical examples of the interest that decision the department in different areas. Yes, you only gave us one. Maybe, yes, we don't have enough time for you to go into details with those issues. Look, I want to check on our chair. Is there any take on the issue of accountability that you have just highlighted, to say that you are calling for the transparency from these state entities and the attitude thereof, because I believe it's important, because I highlighted that issue. Maybe before I go to the second issue, Honorable Chair, let's confirm to the DG that we do study and analyze the documents before we come to meetings. I think it's important to highlight that. Like Honorable Nyambi highlighted, Chair, that we represent the provinces. There's an issue which I want to raise. Yes, I believe this is a relevant platform. You spoke in details in terms of the projects in provinces and the way they could impact in terms of the economic activity in different provinces. And always when we are rising up on these issues, we'll be told, no, this project in terms of our province is not, we're just dismissed that it's not budgeted for. Look, if you go to Bloemfontein, there's a railway line between Bloemfontein that takes you to Lesotho, NH. And the resuscitation of that railway line could save the poor people from the exploitation of the interstate bus line. Because regardless whether the interstate bus line, if they want to increase their fare, they don't even consider whether those your domestic workers in the main, your industrial workers, they did receive salary increase. And that's the point that I'm passionate about, which I want to raise. The third issue on our chair relates to the compliance by ESCOM. As much as we take and carry knowledge of the difficulties or the injuries that affects ESCOM, I believe in the long or medium term, there must be a way out that begins to ensure that ESCOM do comply. By virtue of South Africa being part of, we call it COP 17. I'm not sure whether it's now COP 25. But we are part of the COP 17. We signed those agreements. And I think, Chair, it will be important for the department to say, yes, we have these difficulties, but this is the plan and the strategy to find our way out in terms of the medium and long-term strategy. Chair, can you... The department must share with us. Yes, Honorable Nyambi spoke about the issue of consultants.
But I want to link that, is there any convergence on the usage of consultants versus an ability to retain specialized skill? And if you say you're going to use consultants in the medium term, this financial year, I'm not sure, I read it somewhere in this document. Is there any convergence, DG, on those matters? Talk to us about the issue of remuneration review committee, which was finalized in 2013. How far is that process? And the Provincial Procurement Policy Framework Act. Sure, those are the things which I believe, for me, they are critical when I was studying these documents. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Parkins. Honorable Labus Kahni.
Oh, no, comrade. We've been good colleagues. In the past, and I think we should all consider that. Chair, I want to raise, with your permission, 8 questions. 2 of them have been already partly addressed. I want to start out, and just for clarity, in the beginning it wasn't clear, but later on the DG cleared it out, that I just wanted to make sure, and I've picked it up in the APPs. At this stage, there is no legislation for the department as such. There is the company's legislation, and then actually what is driving this department at the moment is the strategies and policy frameworks and the NDP and those things, right? And but the draft bill is in the APPs being in before the cabinet and will be approved not this year, next year, or in the process. Then the second question is, I would like to know later on for clarity, that the department would come back to this committee on the, because it's been set out in the APPs, but it's not clear to me on the stabilizing and strengthening the state-owned companies by innovative funding options for infrastructure projects within those companies. What is the specific plans and things like that? That is the one thing that I would like to know and get more clarity on. The second one is a very interesting thing, and I think we in South Africa is in this phase, not only in this department, but in various other departments, and I see one of the strategic objectives, and I agree with that, is the industrialization and localization of state-owned companies. And then my question is, versus the opportunities of job losses that may be incurred by industrialization, because worldwide to be industrialized means normally job losses. But then later on in your presentation, you also did the whole thing on skills, on skills development and changing of skills, and I would like this the department to give more input to this committee on how do you see the future, how will you be able to align that. Then the next question is also on the consultants. I picked up in the APPs that there's quite a remarkable or increased amount of money that's been budgeted for that. The reasons for that, and I think my other two colleagues also addressed that, and some of those may be already answered. Then I would like to know the other question is, what percentage, according to the department, what percentage of state funding or fiscal funding from Treasury is being seen as efficient or a minimum for a state-owned company to be sustainable? On that graph, you gave private, state, and that, but what is the, would I say criteria? I don't know. But what would you see would be the minimum for this, for government to invest in a state-owned company to ensure that that state-owned company is will be sustainable if the state is not leaving more money. Then maybe a very naughty question, but I would like to know with the regional development, will there be at one other stage be possible for the department to give to the NCOP, I think this is specifically for the NCOP, a breakdown of the amount of money or the economic impact that's being created by each of these state-owned companies in each of the provinces. And I would like a report like that for the committee. And then, second last one, I would like to know, it's one of the things that's been stated in the strategic plan is saying that expand the oversight tools for the state-owned companies. But when I look through the APC, and I'm sure this maybe it's very new to me and I don't understand, and that's for my side question for clarity, is but when I look at the performance indicators in the APP, none of that has been changed from 2010 up to in the outer years of the NTF, of the medium-term framework. So for me, it's just interesting to see how are we going, what mechanisms are the department going to use that's maybe not part of the APPs, because I understand that APPs is for a certain period and you can't take everything that you're doing in the department into the APP, I do understand it. But I would like to know what mechanisms do you foresee are you going to utilize to be able to make the oversight more proper and more and tighter. And I think for the select committee as well as for the portfolio committee, we need to know, because that's also our way of oversight, because as I said, the performance indicator stays the same. None of it has been changed, except one or two places where a new one came in. And then the last question, thank you, Chair, is the issue of the ESCOM, as you stated it, and some of my colleagues already raised it. The whole thing of the coal-driven electricity economy that we have in South Africa and Greece, and the necessity for that, and the whole dilemma of carbon emissions versus the Department of Environment Affairs, I would like the department to give us an, and if it's not your department, whoever is responsible for that, but according to the strategic objectives, I think this is this department, is how does this align and fall in with SIP 8 of ESCOM, which states the green economy, which has now become part of ESCOM's responsibility. I would like that presentation to this committee. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Thank you, Honorable Labaskahni. Over to Honorable Hai. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Most of the questions I wanted to raise have been raised by Honorable Nyambi, but there are a few that he did not touch. Firstly, let me also welcome the presentation by the DG. The issues that I wanted to ask relate to the buy local campaign that the DG has referred to, whether that there are any monitoring mechanisms in place, but also to ensure that buying local would also mean that this is spread across the provinces, not just buying local in terms of South Africa, but this should also be spread across the provinces. Also, the other issue I would like to find out is this also the revival, the point that you're making, especially the railway lines. For example, where I come from, in the Eastern Cape, the concern that we have that you have two major industrial towns in the Eastern Cape, East London and Port Elizabeth. But there's no rail line that links the two major towns. So, you know, industry depends on road, you know, to transport the goods. And that has been going on for decades now. So that is one of the concerns. So I was happy when you said that you will be starting reviving, so that in the process the jobs will also be created. The other issue is the issue of the SIPs, the strategic infrastructure projects. What role is the department and its state-owned companies is going to be playing alongside this infrastructure that are being built? For example, the building of I'll make an example about my province, Umzimvubu Dam. What role does the department and its state-owned companies is going to play there, as well as in other SIPs, not just the one that I'm making an example of. But also on the issue of compliance with the laws of the country, there's a mention of PFMA. I was looking at the administration. That's where most of the compliance should be taking place, of all the laws, your labor laws, so forth. But I don't see anything except that the PFMA. I would like the department to list all the laws that it's intending to comply with. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member, Honourable Member. I also have two questions to ask. The first question is, DG, you note in slide 21 of the presentation, you refer to retention of critical skills as one of the department's challenges. Are there any other challenges that the committee should know about? For example, is the department happy with the budget allocations for the 2014-2015 financial year? The next question, you refer to a serious overhaul of the department's oversight model, and one would have assumed that the presidential review committee on state-owned companies that was established by the president few years back was to address just that. What is development positions towards the, what is the development positions towards the PRC report? Are you considering its recommendations? Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I'm going to enlist the support of my delegation. I'll deal with some questions, and then I will ask them to tackle others, and of course they can add where there may be gaps. Let me start with the first sort of question that dealt
the competitive environment in our aviation sector and how the committee can answer. It would be because this is an area we share with the Department of Transport. They are actually the policy department that have got the mandate and the instruments to open up
as may be the case, because we've been doing a lot of opening up. They do the bilateral air services agreement. So in the case of Emirates, it will be access granted
in terms of a bilateral air services agreement between South Africa and United Emirates. The issue would be to say, given all of these agreements and the access they have provided, are we able to determine what the economy-wide impact, what has been the economy-wide impact? Are we better off in terms of numbers of people traveling to South Africa and out of South Africa, jobs created? So we can accommodate it like that, because in there we will then see what does it mean for SAA and the other airlines, South African airlines, which is more regional airline. What is the impact on prices, as I was saying? I think to inform a policy decision going forward, how we deal with this area and the challenges, especially for SAA, we will need that information. And it may well be something that the committee asks of the Department of Transport to come and engage with yourselves on. Because we try, you know, bilaterally we try and so on, but sometimes cooperation and alignment eludes us when we try to work with departments. But Parliament has got other powers that the department doesn't have, and they can help us zoom in on some of these areas. You see, because where we opened up and the motivation for it was during the World Cup, where there was a feeling that we need to allow more carriers to come in so they can bring all the people. But it was a once-off sort of event. Since then, those large numbers of people stopped coming. But the access is there. The capacity is there. And one could argue there's even excess capacity, because when you have excess capacity, the margins are narrow. So the margins are compressed. And that's why SAA struggles to make a profit. Of course, there are other factors. The price of fuel is the price of jet fuel and the exchange rate. Any small shift in those prices costs the airline billions of rand in terms of revenue and therefore profitability. So I just want to flag those issues around the airline that we need to get into the detail. I'm just giving you a feel for some of them, but we will need to have very focused discussion. As part of your program, I hope will allow us to come in on particular areas and do a much more detailed there. Obviously, with the democratic dispensation and with the capacity, the electricity capacity that's been there, it's been possible to connect communities. And so a success story, I think, of our democracy and part of our good story is the people who have been connected to the grid, who were previously not connected to the grid. And it's possible to connect people to the grid when there's capacity, when the system has got the capacity. Where capacity is constrained, it means that we will not be able to connect more people. Now, that is a program which ESCOM implements on behalf of the Department of Energy. And ESCOM is able to expand access to the extent that it has been given the resources. It is not possible for ESCOM to utilize its resources. The regulator, when they allocate ESCOM a price that ESCOM can charge, does not include the price of electrification, which is separate. It's a separate allocation that gives to the Department of Energy and the Department of Energy gives to ESCOM. There are complexities that ESCOM is able to connect communities and more people to the extent that the resources it has on the one hand and proximity to the grid, to the most effective and efficient way to the grid in terms of density, community, the population density, proximity to grid, available resources. Those are the factors that determine success for ESCOM. Most of electrification has taken place there. In the rural areas, because of sparseness of communities, grid connection is very expensive. It will cost you a lot more money to connect fewer people. And therefore you want to look at other technologies, solar, wind, and so on. And I think those are sort of the issues that are confronting that program. To the extent that the people who are not connected now are those typically that live in unfriendly territory in the rural areas and sparse. It will be very expensive. Now those are policy options between which I think are really the energy department that should be leading us. Because as I said, ESCOM is merely serves as an agent in regard to that. We are able to, on another occasion, to provide you with localization spend of the companies. I don't have that information right now, but we monitor that, how much they spend, how much they procure locally. And it's not just, things like catering, printing, and so on. It's components, procurement of components that go into the projects themselves. They do compile that information, and we can share it. The GSM bill was an attempt by the department to close this gap, the legislative gap. So they developed a bill, consulted around it, benchmarked it internationally with assistance of the OECD and so on. So for its time, it was the best possible endeavor to deal with state ownership. But I must say, it is worth the effort where we see that the state will continue to exercise ownership of companies. If the state has the intention not to be an owner of companies at some point in the future, that is not really worth it. And that's at the heart of the PLC report. Because the PLC report was premised on the fact that the state intends to continue to maintain ownership, but it wants to rationalize. It wants to create a much clearer framework and guidelines. For example, how you fund these companies, how you monitor them, how you deal with governance, appointment of boards, and that type of thing. That's what the PRC. So it supports this view. It says the PRC report says that the Department of Public Enterprises was correct to take the initiative to create legislation. The legislation did not go through because at about the same time when this happened, Treasury was undertaking a review of the PFMA. And then, of course, the Department of Trade and Industry, which was my department at the time, was also doing a review of the Companies Act. And in these three acts, there was a common engagement with state-owned companies. So the cabinet at the time says, look, you can't have three pieces of legislation to do the same thing. Go back and harmonize and rationalize. And that was it for the bill, because we did not quite succeed in harmonizing it. Eventually, Treasury abandoned the effort at amending the PFMA to deal with the similar sets of issues. When we wanted to go back, then the view was, well, let's wait for the PRC, because you'll preempt the PRC review. So let's wait for it to conclude. And as I said, it has concluded and supports the thing, that initiative. And that's why we've now put it back on our program. We're hoping that in the period ahead, starting with this financial year, but going beyond this, we will be going back revisiting that legislation as such. Yes, the Auditor General made some findings against us. Let me set back the context for it. Until recently, the Auditor General only audited financial information. The focus of the Auditor General was only financial information. But the Auditor General has been warning us, at least I would say for the last 5 years, has been saying we are now going to audit performance information. And they've started to do that. Now, a lot of us were caught by this, because there are technical issues in that space, which is when you say, I'll give you an example. We say there will be an approved shareholder compact. So the wording, our wording is an approved shareholder compact. What is the performance indicator for that? Is signed a signature by the minister, because this is for the minister. This shareholder is the minister. The minister must eventually sign the shareholder compact. That's the evidence that we have delivered on that thing. Now what the department does, we negotiate with the company, we prepare the compact, I look at it, I sign off it, and I say that it's ready to go to the minister. But I can't make the minister sign. The minister may say, no, I want to engage and so on, you know. I need you to take me through this. And then the Auditor General comes in the meantime. The Auditor General comes, says, no, but the minister hasn't signed. So you haven't performed. So we have fights like that with the Auditor General. To say, no, Auditor General. It can't be that the department has done the work. It can't not count for anything. So for the Auditor General, it's either it's signed, the issue has performed, or not. The issue has not performed. So this finding, I want to locate in that context, and of course the SMART principle, I mean, I'm sure members, I don't have to explain that to you. As a result of which, we have said, hey, guys, let's go back to our strategic plans and APP to see how we phrase these things. So we must only put activities for which we have 100% accountability. If it depends on something else that we cannot influence, or it depends on another department, don't phrase it in that way. Phrase it where you can demonstrate when you have done or not done. So there's some learning, some learning experience. Provincial engagements, we will come, there is a program. We will also come and share with you what are the areas we're looking at, what are the projects and the relationships that are being established with the provincial engagements. Well, on the rail between Lesotho and Bloemfontein, As you know, the rail industry in South Africa, state-owned rail industry, is divided into two. There's freight rail and passenger rail. Freight rail is with the Department of Transit. Passenger rail is with the Department of Transport in Plaza. So I'm unable to comment on Plaza. I know that they are also overhauling, you know, their system and bringing capacity, the locomotives and the fleet that they are renewing. The point, however, about this is which I'll make kind of a structural point, that over time, because of the imbalance in incentives, there has been a shift, too radical a shift towards road. That has, we know now, is unsustainable. And the reason for that is because government actually invests in road. Government has been investing in road. Budgets are allocated for road construction and so on. But there is no equivalent investment in rail. And that's why you've seen over time road overtake rail. So there is a disjunction that needs to be corrected. That is why a lot of rail-friendly freight is on road, because capacity and efficiency challenges. But Transnet is dealing with that. And one of the performance targets we've set is that over time they must show that they are winning back rail-friendly freight from road to rail. So the same thing with passenger rail. I think that the investment of Plaza in rail is also informed by the same thing, to say we need to move rail-friendly passenger traffic back on rail, away from roads. But I just wanted to say those issues. Accountability is a process. I'll give you an example. In the midst of a constrained electricity system, we have been saying to ESCOM, speak to the public, inform the public. If you let the people know the issues and the constraints you're dealing with, it's better than if you leave them in the dark and they see the lights going to go off and that type of thing. So speak to the public, address the public. So they do quarterly power system briefings. They will say, this is the state of the electricity system, these are where the challenges are, these are our successes. And then they, in that context, they call for the cooperation of the public. We need to change our culture with regard to the use of electricity. Before I came to this department that deals with electricity, I was very bad as well with the use of electricity. I would be sitting in one room in the lounge, but all the other rooms and outside would be on. Now, because I know how constrained electricity is, I keep the lights on only where I'm seated. When I go to the bedroom, I put it off. When I leave, I go to the toilet, I put it off. But I see when I drive, you know, at the big houses, every room is lit. The chandeliers, big chandeliers. My neighbor's got a big chandelier. I wish I could say to you. So every little bit helps. Every little bit helps. We are very wasteful of electricity. And it's because historically electricity has been very cheap in South Africa. But that time has gone forever. The price, the only direction for electricity prices to go is going to be upwards. The regulator will determine how sharp the prices will go, but as you can see, the regulator is putting down the pressure, the upper pressure of prices. Sometimes the detriment of Eskom, because Eskom Eskom does not charge the electricity cost base price. They're not able to recoup all the costs of producing electricity in the price of electricity. So they're actually subsidizing, and that's why they've got these financial challenges that they have right now. Eskom, being the leading polluting company in the land, because of the industry they are in, coal-based electricity, which is 90% of electricity, has for a long time been alive to the challenges of environmental and climate change and all of that, and they've been engaging with that issue. What we have done is to say, no, this is not only for Eskom. Transnet also pollutes. SAA also pollutes. So let's create a framework, what we call a climate change framework. So we've got now a framework that spells out what we expect of the companies in the space of climate change and the environment. We develop some guidelines and we monitor them. So they are all signatories to the UN Climate Change Compact, which requires of them to do certain things, invest in cleaner and adopt more cleaner technologies and practices. So and of course we've got a partnership with the Department of Environment in this area. So we need to nudge them in the right direction, and we are doing that. And again, we can engage with this issue at the right time. The remuneration framework. This is where, and this is. I want to take this question also in relation to the question about how we improving. You're saying we're going to strengthen and how we make our oversight more effective. So that's a generic statement. But in there, you know, there are a number of things. For example, how they deal with remuneration. It's been an area that was never regulated. And by the way, even in the private sector, remuneration of directors is something that shareholders often didn't get involved or didn't take it seriously. Until you see these massive increases, these opulent bonuses. So all shareholders, whether state shareholders or private shareholders, I say no. We want to get involved. We want to approve the remuneration, and so it's part of shareholder activism. So what we did, we reviewed. We had some guidelines, but we've reviewed and strengthened them to give us a lot more control of that area, so that there is no abuse. And the point, the principle is link bonuses to performance. You can't have a company fail to achieve its target or have a loss. They have a loss, massive loss, and they still go on to pay bonuses. So this is really some of those things. So the work is completed, and by the way, let me also link it to consultants, because we had to do, it's a very, very sensitive issue. We have to do it very right. We have to do it in a very scientific manner. And where we didn't have the expertise internally, we got the expertise. And we're not a department that kind of willy-nilly just, I have been a public servant for a long time, and I knew that a consultant will take your money and give you nothing. So I regulate that area very, very closely. So I make sure we only use consultants where we have the need for some professional expertise that to be able to do our work. That is not available in-house. And it's a once-off thing. So the use of consultants for this area will be once-off. We will never do until we review these things, which will probably be much further down the line, because we're only now implementing the new remuneration framework. But we also do in the strengthening of oversight. We do things like we want to monitor your wasteful expenditure. Tell us what you're doing with wasteful expenditure or unauthorized expenditure, and what actions you're taking. And in your report it separately. So you see the annual reports, the other section of wasteful, which one. So we try to put a spotlight on it, on that area. And usually that area is associated with poor controls and accountability within the company. We call forums of internal auditors where we share good best practice, and we intend to have a forum of chairmen of companies, because they are the accounting authorities. The department puts the boards, and so we must hold the board accountable. So we have these sort of so there's quite a lot of things like that the target in the way set up may not be able to give you an insight into. The industrialization, in contrast to the way you understand it, we understand industrialization to be very much associated with the job, sustainable job creation. Because industrial jobs, manufacturing jobs, are a lot more sustainable than services jobs. You see, when services jobs, particularly in certain sectors of the services industry, like retail, when there's a downturn, the first jobs that are lost in those services in the retail. Because the workers there typically don't have job security. That jobs in the manufacturing companies, especially where they have invested in skills, they don't lose their workers easily. They try to retain those workers for the next time there's an upturn. They try to keep those workers. But the shop rides, checkers and so on, when it's downturn, they get rid of labor. So industrial jobs are much more sustainable. And that's why we want to expand industries so that they can employ people, and those people can have more sustainable jobs. But I guess, you know, we can have a discussion and a debate about the issue on another occasion. By local, how we monitor this, we monitor it in regards to this program I call the competitive suppliers. How many additional suppliers have you taken on board, and what are the products that you are procuring, and how many additional jobs are created by supporting that supplier. That's how we monitor it in terms of the shareholder compact. But we want to do this on a wider level, so we'll be cooperating with the Department of Economic Development. They have a localization unit in one of the development finance institutions, the IDC, the Industrial Development Corporation, has got a localization area. So we want to develop common methodologies for monitoring this by localization. I think the revival of the railways will necessitate that the branch line. So I look at what you're saying about between East London and Port Elizabeth more as a branch line as opposed to the main trunk. So the investments that Transnet is currently undertaking are with the main trunk linking main major centres throughout the economy. But for those who succeed, they need feeder branch lines. And I think there's an opportunity. And the big question right now is policy question, if you're engaging the Department of Transport, is that shouldn't Transnet let the private sector take over? Or provinces, some of the provinces can take over the branch lines. So the Eastern Cape province, in my view, if they see an opportunity, because investment is justified by if there's traffic, if there's traffic and volumes, if there are goods to move, and you see there's a market, you know, you can invest. But typically, branch lines, investment in branch lines is constrained because there are no volumes as such. DPE, through the state-owned companies, we are involved in the SIPs. ESCOM is coordinating the SIPs in a number of areas, I think SIP 1 and the Green Economy SIP. ESCOM is supposed to coordinate Transnet SIP 2. So we are very much part of the SIPs. I've taken note of your request about legislation. That is the main piece of legislation that we are impacted upon. We will provide that information. I think about the budget allocation of TPE, whether we're happy, I think more than any issue, I think it is about whether the model of a government department is an appropriate model for the exercise of shareholder oversight. Remember that this department, when it was started, it was supposed to actually do the opposite. It was supposed to be to privatize. It was supposed to be the office of privatization until policy changed. So we're not privatizing. We are retaining state-owned companies and we are using them strategically. But it was an office. It was an office. I believe that it should be more than an office. It should be more than a department. It should be an agency along the lines of, say, the South African Revenue Service. Because the nature of the skills you require and we compete with them, with the private sector, we compete with the private sector, which can pay better salaries. So you need an agency. SARS is effective because they're not governed by, you know, the Public Service Act, so they are able to attract high caliber skills. I think that this is something worth considering for this department going forward. But for now, we will do best with the resources we have. If you ask any director general if they are happy with the resources they get, you get only one answer. I want colleagues to come in, especially Jackie, on the innovative fund. What are you trying to do there? What are your outputs? What outputs have you defined? Cynthia, maybe you can come in on the electricity issues. But I tried to answer most of the questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Jackie. Thank you for the question. Around the issue of the innovative funding solutions that we're actually looking at, we're actually looking at how we can actually, even in terms of the private sector participation, how we can actually crowd in the private sector. The one example that one can actually make is actually to understand that given the fiscal constraints, the SOCs cannot fund all the infrastructure build programs that are currently there. So in order to do that, what is actually done is that the work is that we actually crowd in by using the multilateral institutions, the funding from the African Development Bank, the World Bank, the Clean Technology Fund. And these are the projects that have actually assisted in terms of actually funding the 100 megawatt setup plant and also the 100 megawatt wind plant. So those are the what that's what we're talking about. We're also talking about, for example, in terms of project-based funding. In terms of the innovative funding, we also have a collaboration with the department with the Development Bank of South Africa through the IPSA fund. Currently, there's been the RFP around that in terms of how we're going to fund the infrastructure investment programs of that are currently being undertaken by South African companies also even the state-owned companies. So these are the areas that one is actually looking at. So we actually want to leverage and crowd in additional funding, given the funding constraints. The other question that was asked is, what is it that we're also doing? What is the minimum, I think, in terms of the capital structure of to make the SOCs sustainable? When you look at the private sector, in terms of the capital structure of that, it's either 60 to 40, 70 to 30. But now, as the DG has already alluded, in terms of the role of the SOCs is both dual, it's commercial and developmental. So we're also going to try and crowd in the private sector and the multilateral institutions in terms of doing that work. We're part of also the working together with the National Treasury on the infrastructure team, and also looking at how we can actually even begin to engage with the private sector through the BASA, that's the Banking Association of South Africa, to also understand as to what it is that would actually enable the private sector to then bring money into the SOCs. So this is probably what one wants to indicate. And even around the issue of the innovative funding, it's currently undergoing through with the IPSA, which is being monitored by the DBSA. The RFP has actually gone out, and we'll be actually looking in terms of how we actually fund that. The other question it was as well, it was asked around even the SIPs that we're the SIP that we're currently involved in as a department. We are involved in the SIP 1, that is the water bill, the SIP 1 that is being currently being coordinated by ESCOM. We're also in the SIP 2, which is being coordinated by Transnet, that's the Gauteng, Free State, and the KZN. And we're also in the SIP 9 and 10 in terms of the role that we're doing. So we're working very closely with the SOC's project management units in terms of making sure that, you know, the project and the business plans are well coordinated and well aligned. And that is the work that we're currently doing. So that is, in short, that's what I wanted to probably indicate. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I think the ESCOM issues, most of them the DG has responded to them. I'll just touch on the issue around the Medupi, the construction that is happening there. There was a question around, you know, whether once it's completed, how is it going to contribute towards, the problem we're facing now around emissions. In the immediate, it won't assist. And the reason for that is that you need all the capacity that you can get for now to relieve the power system. So it will be adding to the system in terms of generation capacity. However, in the long run, there is a plan which is being developed, led by the Department of Energy, the Integrated Resource Plan, which determines, you know, the generation capacity requirements over the next 20 years and looking at the different technologies. And what it also does is that it tries to balance all the competing objectives around infrastructure development, including ensuring affordability, dealing with issues of, you know, environment and emissions and so on. So one of the things that the plan, and it's under review at the moment, I believe they want to finalize it by the end of the financial year. So one of the things that it looks at is, you know, because ESCOM has old plants, at some point they'll have to be retired. So how do you replace them in a manner that, you know, balances cost effectiveness but also protection of the environment? So the plan suggests a lot of renewables coming in. It also suggests nuclear plants being introduced and so on. So that should be able to deal with issues of the environment going forward. As you retire more old and less efficient plants, then you replace them with more environmentally friendly and cheaper options.
I think that also deals with the issue around CIP 8, the balance between the coal-driven economy and the green economy. There was a question also around, you know, the benefits to the communities through this construction of Medupi. If you went to Lephalale in 2007 and you go there today, it's a completely different town. You can see the benefits of the investment that has been made there. The roads are being upgraded. I believe there's a road that is being recently launched between Eskom and Exxaro, investment that they made to improve that road. At one point, there was about 17,000 people employed in one site. I mean, you talk about companies having 17,000 people nationally, we're talking one site here. And about 40% of that, it was people from the area in Lephalale. So employment creation has been significant there. True, it's a construction project that will end at some point, but people have been employed and they have been trained so for future projects. When projects happen, you can always rely on those people. From a procurement perspective as well, you know, a lot of procurement has happened around that area. I think the last time I saw the figures, at least $2 billion was spent procured from the local area. So there's been massive, massive benefits for the area in relation to the construction project.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to follow up on a few issues that the DG, I think some of them he touched on the issue of consultants. If you compare the 13-14 annual report, I think it's still coming to the committee, and the 12-13 annual report, you'd already recognize that there's been quite a significant drop in our spending on consultants. In 12-13, we're 31.68% of our goods and services budget, which if you look at the total budget of the department, excluding transfer payments that we do to the SOCs, it stood at around 9.11%. In the 13-14 financial year, we are at 18.1% of the goods and services budget and 6.2% of the total budget excluding transfers. DG also mentioned that we are a professional services department and it is practically impossible to have all the professional services skills that you require on different projects, especially projects that come also. I don't see a situation where we will completely raise spending on consultants, but as DG has indicated, it's one of those issues that are on his dashboard as part of the KPIs to continuously monitor and ensure that we don't exceed a particular threshold. There was a question around the oversight mechanisms that we're utilizing. I thought I just needed to highlight that there is shareholder compacts that are signed between the department and each SOC. These are approved by the minister. There's lots of work that happened between the department and the SOC to agree on the targets informed by lots of research that we do in the department and as the SOC on industry information, industry performance, and etc. And these are monitored on a day-to-day basis. There are people who are employed in DPE to simply focus on monitoring and do quarterly and monitor the quarterly reporting and whether the SOCs are delivering according to the agreements that have been signed with the minister. The issue about retention of critical skills, I think it's a critical issue for DPE because you would understand that we deal with people who have highly specialized skills and some of them get even recruited internally by the SOCs and the SOCs pay much more better than DPE because DPE is categorized as a government department. So the salaries that the SOCs pay, they can recruit somebody who is a DG at DPE. DGs, I think the package is probably 1 point something and offer 2 million, So the retention, in our retention approach, we are not competing with SOCs or with private sector, but we want to ensure that we're able to retain the critical skills that we require as the department. And there are constraints because we are a government department. We cannot go above certain levels that have been set up and established, but we try and negotiate around those because there is a package for retention. It's not just looking at salaries. There's other things that you look at and build as part of retention. There was a question around the compliance with laws. I think what we did in the report or in the documents that you have, we just highlighted the key policies or legislations that we have to comply with as a department, but I just want to assure members that we have no option but to comply with all policies, your labor relations, your public service regulations, and all kinds of legislation that has been put there in legislation. So we want to assure that we are in compliance with most of them. But as you know, compliance, sometimes you discover through audits that there is some piece of legislation that you may not even know exists, or some regulation that has been introduced that you need to comply with. But we have a monitoring system in place as the department. And lastly, there was a question on the economic impact in relation to regional development and provinces. I think what I wanted to highlight here is that there is work in progress that the department is doing, just looking at the economic impact of our SOCs. This is also supported by a project which is planned in the current financial year that looks at review of SOC performance over a particular time frame. I think it's a 5-year review of SOC performance. So I do think that at some stage when we are ready, we should be able to share that information. It is still really work in progress at this stage. Thank you.
I think there is a follow-up or a new question. Honorable Pakis, a follow-up, and then Honorable Smith, and there is another follow-up by Honorable Hai.
Sorry.
And also Comrade Safi.
It's just a follow-up, DG. You spoke about the performance audit by the general the audit on you, as much as the way you have put it that they can't hold you accountable on something that you cannot be hard on it. But I believe it does not make the department to escape, or a passage to escape in terms of the performance audit. I suppose that's not what you meant. The second issue, Chair, even if this one they cannot respond to, some of us, we are good listeners. When we look like we are sleeping, we're not sleeping, we're listening very carefully. Now, she was contradicting what the DG said on the issues of the consultants, because the DG said the issue of consultants is a once-off issue. But then the way you put it to say, no, as much as we're going to reduce our expenditure or budget on the issue of consultants, but they will permanently remain with us. That's how I read from what you are saying, because you will just reduce the expenditure. But because you are a professional service department, consultants will remain with you. Now, I need you to connect that statement.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My question is twofold and integrated with some suggestions as well. DG, I'm specifically on ESCOM. Coming from, you know, looking out of a community perspective, basically, it feels like ESCOM is both, you know, they both want to grow and shrink at the same time. Because, you know, in the same instance it said save electricity, which is going to bring down the income. and on the other side they want to get increase the income. So, you know, it's a contradicting situation with which it's sitting in. I want to hear, okay, firstly I want to know what was the reason for the upward trends in pricing in Eskom's in the electricity price. Out of a business perspective, it's normally price is determined by demand and supply. So can it be because of a lack of supply and a bigger demand? Then I want to hear how, okay, as we sit as a country with two problems basically. The one is a shortage of energy supply. On the other side, we sit with poverty and unemployment. How is Eskom capitalizing on this, which is actually opportunity, to invest, you know, or get, you know, to invest in solar and wind farms in especially rural poor communities to involve them, you know, through small business development. I mean, there's initiatives that can be used to get them involved to create both jobs, boost the rural economy, and solve the problem of electric supply. How, you know, how is Eskom? Is it looking at that in the long term? If not, it's something that we can definitely look at.
Thank you, Member Smith. Honorable Hai.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just a follow-up. I wanted to find out whether there is any structural arrangement between the department and the provinces. For example, in other departments where there's a national and provincial competencies, you find a structure that is called MINMEC, where the ministers and the MEC meet and give opportunities to provinces to also raise their issues. I wanted to check if there is such an arrangement with the department, because I know it's just a national competence, so there are no provincial departments that link up with it. Yeah, so that particularly this issue of the revival of the lines. I wanted to further check whether there has been any study that has been conducted by the department in particular with regard to the viability of the lines, where then the department in consultation either with the provinces or even with the private sector, that on this one Transnet we are not going to be involved. We therefore suggest that provinces must take over those lines, or we bring in the private sector. So that kind of a arrangement, but which is informed by a study. So I wanted to check if there is such a study. But the last point is on the strategic overview. I find that for me the situational analysis, there should be some expansion on the situational analysis. That for me should also take into account the socio-economic situation in the country, and also specifically in provinces, so that your strategy is able then to intervene in such a, because for me it just focuses only on economic outlook, yet your SOC's role is to intervene also in socio-economic situations. For instance, what is the situational analysis of the transport in the country? And therefore, how do you intervene as a department and SOCs? What is the situational analysis with regard to electricity supply in the country? And therefore, how do you then intervene? So that at least it is there in the strategic overview. It could perhaps be in the strategic overview of the SOCs, but I think at least there should be within the department itself an overarching situational analysis on these areas. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Member Hai. Over to Honorable Safaku.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chair. Just two questions. One is on the state ownership, which is not clearly defined. I just want to check whether we've got the department that is called the legal department. If you do have, was there any attempt maybe to find out, that you interrogate this and come up with the recommendations that can perhaps end up coming up with a solution? Maybe also in the Act, just to, if you do have that department. The second one is on the SEDZ and linking it with the state of the Premier's address in Northwest, the Special Economic Development Zone. They've identified around Rustenburg the processing of the platinum. Will ESCOM, as the situation is, be able to supply electricity in those aspired project? Because it is around Rustenburg, and also the processing of gold around the Klerksdorp, the upgrading of the Vilanspek airport, because that's the area that is highly developing in terms of its mineral, and also is attracting the tourists to the Sun City and the Pilansbeck range. Let me rest there. Those are the only two questions.
Thank you, Honorable Safaku. I think our time has expired, but I'm going to allow the department, DG, to respond to that.
So I'll be very quick. In fact, to be honest with you, on the performance audit, with the issue we had with the Auditor General, was to defend the department, to defend the performance of the department. When we started to have a kind of a dispute with the Auditor General, they had said we had performed only to the extent of 32%, which, knowing this department and knowing my staff and the way how hard they work, I thought was not true. It was more on the evidence, availability of evidence, documentation, how we said we're going to be monitored. And in that process, we were able to push it up from 32% to 68%. Yeah. Still far below the 80% norm, because when you have performed, according to the session, you must have met 80% of your tax. But it was, if you look at the history of the department, that will come as a low point, I think, in what is actually a very good, impressive track record. This is a department that has had 8 consecutive clean audits. Clean, not unqualified. Clean, without any emphasis of matter. When I arrived there, that was a track record. I made sure that I continue the track record. And we have the systems and the controls to make sure that we keep that. This year, we're back to 80. So that was an isolated event. There's no contradiction between what the COO and myself have said.
she's saying institutionally, by virtue of the work we do institutionally, we will always use consultants. Generally. But it doesn't mean that we will be tied up with consultants for the rest of, for all time. If we get Deloitte and Touch to come in, they come in and do a specific job and that's it, which is where I was coming from. So we will always go to consultants for various things, and it will usually be to buy a service. Can you do a proposal for us on this particular issue? They do it over a period, we pay them, we get the thing. So there's no contradiction. I'm going to ask the DDG for Eskom to deal with the question about Eskom asking people to save electricity, but also needing the revenue and the reasons for Eskom's price increases very 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 quickly. There is no min mag for PTE, but we do have this provincial engagement, which is in fact our own min mag. We try to cover that gap, because this is not necessarily defined as concurrent functioning in constitutional terms, but practically, because the projects of the companies take place in a specific locality in a province. The province has an interest, and there are opportunities for enhancing synergies. So we do this engagement, which we will share with you. I take the point about on branch lines. There is work that's been done. The branch lines that could potentially be hyped off have been identified. The economics of it, the business case, and in fact, we are going to go on pilot. The Transnet has identified three branch lines where we were going to go out to the market to see if there's private sector interest. It's just viability, commercial viability that will determine whether the private sector will come in and whether the state, where there is no viability, whether the state can subsidize. So there are complex issues there, but again, we can come back and deal with all of that. Situational analysis, I take your point. I think we did it from a macroeconomic point of view. You are saying go one level deep, go two level deep, deal with sectoral situational analysis and deal with socioeconomic. I take the point. We will try and do that perhaps for the next round. The definition of state ownership is in the Act, that bill that I told you, that didn't go through, but it's also in the Presidential Review Commission, the report, which I would advise the community to avail themselves to that report. It does define what state ownership is and how we might want to deal with it in legal and legislative terms going forward. And I think here we can also add the question around Eskom supply to the special economic zones. Thanks.
Yeah. It's not an easy answer. Especially, you know, how you supply electricity is based on the demand at that point in time. So more often than not, Eskom is able to meet the demand. And then there are areas, and especially during winter, in the afternoon, where there's a lot of demand because people are coming back from home, they're turning on the heaters, they're cooking. Then usually that time demands far exceeds supply. And that's been the area that has been the main focus, that, you know, if you can reduce and manage your consumption around that area so that you can be able to supply and meet the demand. But having said that, there is a need for the country as a whole to be more energy efficient, especially going forward. Because what it also does is that you don't have to build as much. We do have to build new generation capacity going forward for the future. And it really depends on how much we consume and how much do we demand electricity. So the more we demand, it means we have to spend more, and which means we have to you have to build more. And if you spend more and build more, it means you have to, you know, be able to recover those costs. And usually, you know, there's that debate that comes up between ESCOM and the regulator. So when you say safe, there are those instances where it affects ESCOM in terms of meeting the demand. But if you've invested in the infrastructure and then the demand doesn't meet or doesn't come as expected, then it creates that conundrum around whether you'd be able to generate enough revenue to pay for the investment that you've made. So that's the balance between the two.
Yes. I think maybe you misunderstood my question. I didn't talk about my question was rather on because we sit with this problem of supply demand, you know, and that ESCOM both asked to save and, you know, want to increase its income. How does ESCOM incorporate the concept of small, you know, smaller suppliers that actually invest through small business development in especially rural communities to use them to generate electricity through solar and wind farms in that communities? That's my question.
There is already that program. Unfortunately, it's not run by ESCOM, it's run by the Department of Energy. Where they encourage, you know, investments in smaller units, in especially rural areas, mainly solar, to generate electricity for those communities. But also, ESCOM also, you know, take that into account when they invest in their network infrastructure, so that they'll be able in future to connect those communities to be integrated into the system. So they it's part of the plans. It's included in the plans.
Yeah,
there was a question around, you know, whether ESCOM would be able to supply the proposed processing plants for platinum and gold. ESCOM indicates that, you know, they're not refusing any supply. They do connect customers going forward, but it also means that, you know, the delivery of the Medupis and the Busilias become critical to ensure that going forward they will be able to meet, you know, those growing demands.
Thank you very much. I think as a request, there's a request of PLO, Mr. Khalid Said, to say something before my closing remarks. Do you want to say something? Okay, now you're welcome to say something.
But thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm looking very forward basically to working with the committee. And I've worked before also with the chairperson of the committee. I'm very pleased to be working with this committee, and especially with the current chairperson, in particular. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. In my closing remarks, I once again would like to thank the department, EG, your department, for the excellent presentation. I think if I picked up even the members were so good, due to your presentation, they could intervene and address the committee. Obviously, there is some knowledge out there that one experience, but was it not for the presentation, you wouldn't have that kind of understanding to be able to ask certain questions. So we really appreciate it. I must say that for me, this it came out that there are three very important points came out of this presentation, the basis of its, the basics of SOCs, cutting edge business practices by lay the foundation for economic growth and make sure that there be radical economic transformation. It is what came out of your presentation. To unlock growth, drive the industrialization, create jobs, and develop skills. We as the committee will make sure that we will fulfill our mandate of oversight to achieve these objectives. I also want to say, of acknowledge the presentation. Sorry that I didn't acknowledge you in the beginning of the PMG, the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. The lady, Joanna Boysen, thank you for being here. I didn't see any media persons here. I don't know whether the media is attending our committee meetings, as it is always in the practice. And then I will always, I will also acknowledge ESCOM. You know why? I did have a question, but I thought, no man, ESCOM is not here. I cannot ask this question to the DG. You won't be able to answer. It's only lately that I get, I think you introduce yourself, but you know, me, whatever, was so, or you came late also. Sorry, because I would understand that I will forget, because I was so nervous this morning that things must run smoothly that I would be able to forget if you I did meet you. But thank you. In any case, I would ask the question the next meeting where we are going to meet with you, because I want to understand. I don't know whether it is stupid or what. Where is the responsibility of ESCOM versus local government? And I know why I'm asking that. Because, you know, I experienced when you pronounced that you were going to be off and work, you know, in your plants, you are going to do things there. A certain town will also do their things. And there was an electrician who was mentioning that, that the blame is ESCOM. You know, that kind of thing. So one needs to understand where your responsibility stops and where the local government responsibility. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think
this meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Is there something to eat?
Yes.
Okay, there's still something left. You can grab something. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep. Can I just also on behalf of the department thank you very much. I appreciate the engagement. I found it very useful. I can see that we are going to have a very robust engagement with the committee. I was very impressed with the questions that. We may not have dealt with everything to the full satisfaction of Mugan. We will, if there's any information that we feel we didn't cover, we will, through the PLO, submit it so that it's shared with the members. But thank you very much.